Welcome to the Hypnotic Healers Podcast, your home for insights and insider knowledge about hypnotic change work. With your hosts, control practitioners and hypnotists, Nicole Mazzucato and Anthony Gitch.
Hello, and welcome back to another episode of Hypnotic Healers. I'm Nicole Mazzucato, and as always, I'm here with my friend and co-host, Anthony Gitch, who's just moved, by the way. Not very far away from his old place, but hey, moving is moving. Our usual disclaimer before we get started, neither Anthony nor I are licensed medical professional psychologists, psychiatrists, or anything of the sort, so do not make any changes to any treatments or medications that you're on based on the conversation you hear here today. Take what you like and leave the rest, and while you're leaving stuff, leave us a like, a love, a heart, a thumbs up, a really nice review, leave us a message, get in touch, say hello, tell us how you're doing, tell us how you're getting on with the podcast. We love to hear from you guys. Yeah, we've heard some really nice comments from people recently. We've heard some other comments that haven't been as encouraging, which is fine too. We can take it all.
Well, actually, those comments are encouraging as well.
Well, you know, we can't be everybody's cup of tea, and that's fine too, you know. So, but if you do have feedback for us, good, bad, or indifferent, you know, bring it on. Bring it on. Yeah. We can only learn and grow. So,
correct.
Yeah.
Correct. And yes, I did just move. I'm still not totally, I mean, we started on Friday and I spent 5 hours cleaning the place that we moved out of yesterday, just because I'm just one of those kind of people. So there was, I mean, I fixed every spot on the wall. I painted all the little, they have to do nothing to move somebody or to sell that place. At any rate, there we go. And today, but you know, I'm glad about today because we are going to talk. A few weeks ago, you and I spoke about the belief that many people had that change is difficult, that change is hard. And we decided today that we're going to do a little impromptu discussion about why we believe that change is actually easy.
Well, aren't all of our conversations a bit impromptu?
Well, they are kind of. Yeah, I mean, none of them are scripted, that's for sure. But at least sometimes we have at least a couple of days ahead of time to know what we're going to talk about.
Okay.
Sometimes we do. Remember, we have that list somewhere.
It's true. We do have a list of topics. We do.
We do. I think it's on a Google Drive or something, isn't it?
It is. It's on a Google Sheets document.
Yes. Because right. We are prepared.
Well, Nicole is anyway.
Yes, she is.
Anyway, so, back to the point.
Yeah. I think it's important that we have this conversation because, you know, like a lot of people, I used to believe that too. In fact, if somebody would have told me that in my mid-20s, before I really started to do the work that I do and focus on that personal growth, I would have told them they were full of shit.
The change is easy.
Yeah. The change isn't easy. Look at everything I'm doing. Look at what I'm doing. But the thing is, change becomes easy once you accept responsibility for where you are in your life.
Right. And I think that's the key piece in all of this. You have to be ready and in the right place.
Yes.
I think we've talked about this before. You know, somebody could read a book and be like, oh my God, you have to read this because it's going to change your life. It's got all of the answers you've been looking for. And they give you the book, they buy it for you, they put it in your hand, right?
Oh my God, I feel like I'm walking into a church.
Yeah. And you're like, do you know what? I'm just going to stick it on the shelf and I'll pick it up when I feel like it. And you walk past that book every day for 5 years until, you know, 10 years later, you pick it up just out of curiosity. More than anything, because you are in exactly the right space to read that book and read that information. You're like, oh my God, why didn't I read it before?
Recognizes that there it is.
Yeah. Yeah. But even if you had read it in the beginning, it wouldn't have done anything. It may not have gone in. You might have been skeptical. You might be thinking, oh, this is a load of rubbish, isn't it? And, oh, well, you know, okay, fair enough, but blah, 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 whatever.
Right.
Well, you might have started reading it and then thought, well, I can't really get into this. I'm not into it. I'm just falling asleep. I'm bored. I'm just going to put it down. So it's changes like anything like that. You have to be in the right, it's like the right place at the right time.
Well, you, yeah, I mean, it's about responsibility. Even more so about right time. It's about, well, right place. It's right time.
Right place mentally is what I'm saying. Yeah.
It's I don't disagree at all. It's when we are not pointing the finger of blame, change starts to, when we start to look at our challenges or whatever is ahead of us that we think is blocking us or we feel is blocking us, when we can start to not overanalyze or not even analyze it, but just look at it and sit with it for a minute and just actually from the point of the observer, right? Mm-hmm. If I am outside of this, how would I help a friend of mine that was going through this? What would I suggest to them, right? Because when we can look at the things that we're experiencing that way, I think it does make change a little bit easier because we're more objective. We're not as, because once we're tied to a situation, we're kind of screwed because with the attachment, the attachment to the outcome. And so we're going to try to make any kind of justifiable argument that we can internally, number one, to remain the same. And that's what makes change hard because it's always, but when we start to do that differently.
I think, look, sometimes change, you start to embrace change on your own, right? And very much like you say, you start to step out of the victim mentality and start to take responsibility for your own life, your own actions, your own consequences, and start realizing that actually this story that I'm in, this story that I'm living is the one that I'm creating. And I'm the one that can rewrite that narrative. I'm the one that can change that narrative and change what's to come. Sometimes you need a good kick up the ass. And oftentimes that kick up the ass, well, I don't know. I was going to say, but I think I'm going to backtrack there. But I was going to say oftentimes when that kick up the ass comes from somebody you respect, it's a bit more, it has a bit more oomph to it.
I would agree. Absolutely. I wouldn't backtrack on that. Because I'll tell you what, we had a good friend of mine on, Karen Bosque, and when she gives me a kick in the ass, it does act a little bit differently for me. I'll tell you what, it stings a little differently. Right? It hits home. It hits a little differently because, it's like if you were to give me feedback on something or, it would be because you're, those people that are more important, I think there's a bit more of something that matters for that kind of thing. Because those are people who are important to us, and those are people that I think in any kind of personal relationship, outside of the kind of, client relationship. I think that kind of a kick in the ass is sometimes more powerful than anything else, or at least it has been for me. Those have been some of the biggest pieces of awareness have come from those people.
Yeah. And look, so a kick in the ass works in some ways for some people and in other ways for other people. And that depends on how you're, and I think we throw the word choose around a bit too much in this profession, in this industry, I think in the kind of self-help industry, if you like. I think we throw the word around you're choosing that behavior or you're choosing to do that a little bit too freely, because as we well know, people come to us to help them make changes on a subconscious, on an unconscious level that they're not consciously choosing. And so I think this idea of constantly saying to, but you're choosing that and you're choosing to be ill and you're choosing to do this and you're choosing to do that.
I think is what they mean. This is what I won't disagree with what you're saying. I will, however, add to it in a way that I think that once you become aware of a undesirable behavior, a character flaw, whatever you want to call it, Once you become aware of that and you begin to consciously choose to ignore, when you see yourself going down that path, that is a choice.
Okay.
That is a choice. I want to be a douchebag. I'm going to choose the old way. I'm not going to choose the new way because the new way is hard. The new way makes me responsible, right? So when you're not aware, I completely agree. That's not a choice. When you are aware, when someone has made you aware, no, that's just, I don't want to. I'm going to do the easy thing.
Yeah. But that's what I'm saying. You know, there's, okay, once you're aware of something, then there's absolutely a level of, there's a level of responsibility in that and a level of choice. And I think this whole, again, coming back to the idea of choosing, I think it can be very accusatory as well. So, okay, somebody's made you, you've become aware that you get angry really quickly, you know, maybe before, you know, and it's a response. It's a subconscious response. It's a subconscious programming. You've got a crew member that's like, that's my job. I need to get angry. I'm going to, you know, spitfire out at everyone around me.
Yep.
Yeah. Okay. So you become aware that that's an issue and you still get triggered and still respond in that way. Right.
Right.
But the awareness, where am I trying to go with this? I don't really know where I'm trying to go with this. What I'm trying to say is when you're working on making a change and changing that automatic response, mm-hmm. I also don't believe that we should be beating ourselves up if we drop the ball.
No.
Do you see what I mean?
No, but that's where personal responsibility comes into play
right.
by stepping up and saying, whoa, I just recognize what I've done and I need to clean up my side of the street.
Right, exactly.
That is an important, because by doing that, now you're reinforcing the idea. It's going to help you get more quickly to get to that change point because sometimes you having to go up and apologize for just being a fucking jerk, it's like that helps to teach you a lesson that, man, I don't think I want to do that again.
Yeah.
Not only did it make me feel bad what I just did, but now I even feel like a freaking like jerk for having to go up and apologize too, right? You know?
Yes.
But what a great lesson, you know? But yeah, it's that, yeah, because it's not necessarily a choice. I mean, when you snap, right? It's
going to
happen sometimes. People are human beings. But it's taking the responsibility for it.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Because that is what's going to outweigh, I think, most of the time in most situations, depending upon the gravity of things, the fact that you've stepped up and owned what's going on will oftentimes help to overshadow the inappropriate behavior because people recognize and they go, okay, well, I can understand being human too, right? And it is so uncommon for people to take responsibility for their behavior that just shocks the hell out of them. So they don't know what to do anyway.
Yeah, for sure. And okay, so going back to the idea that change is easier than I think we've been taught it is, right? You know, a lot of people have this idea that change is really difficult and the kind of typical, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. Well, that's bollocks. You can teach an old dog new tricks because I've done it.
Well, I'll tell you, and you want to know who actually one of the people, you know, we were just talking about those people who will say something and then it's like, ooh, boy, I won't forget that, right? So of all people, Brit Box. She said something to me one time about, because I was making an excuse, well, you know, there's some old folks out there, you know, in their 80s and whatnot, and they really don't understand it. And she's like, that's bullshit, you know, in her way, you know, that's just, how stupid are they? What do you mean they can't change? At that age, they should be really good at changing, actually, right? Mm. But she made such a point of it that moment has stuck in my mind whenever I go down that path of thinking.
We're changing all the time, right? We're not the same as we were yesterday, last week, you know, last year, whatever. You don't believe the same things that you believed when you were a kid. So you don't believe in Santa Claus anymore. You know that that's not a real thing, that that's a concept, an idea, whatever, right? You don't believe in flying reindeers, or maybe you do. I don't know. But mostly,
some people believe
the
earth is flat, Nicole. So
anyway, your beliefs, your ideas change as you get older, right? As new information comes in, as you hear new ideas. And I think that's the point. You see, hear, and experience new things, and that equates to new information. Yeah. And that new information leads to a change in beliefs and ideas. And that in itself is a change.
Mm-hmm.
And right. You make choices to change all the time. You made a choice to, you know, you make a choice to learn to drive. That's a huge change that you make in your life.
Yeah.
Right? You may make a choice to have a different diet, to exclude something from your diet, to include something in your diet, whatever it is. So we're making choices to make changes all the time.
Right. And it's easy. And here's the thing. Here's another way to kind of look at it. When we think about, and I use this idea of a car thing because I like my car to be clean. But there are times when I have sat there, when I've looked at the vehicle out in the driveway and I've thought, fuck, I gotta go wash my car, but I just don't want to. The moment though that I decide to do it, it becomes easy.
Mm.
Right? It's just like what we talk about in some of the smoking stuff. Once you decide to do something, it's no longer a challenge.
Mm.
Right? I mean, anything that if you think about it, when you've done something scary or something new for the first time and you've been real apprehensive, once you've decided, I'm just doing it.
It's so true. It's so true. And I can give you a real example. When I was traveling, when I was in my early 20s, I was in New Zealand and they've got a lot of really kind of major bungee jumps in New Zealand. And I was on like a mission to scare the shit out of myself, apparently, just to, you know, push myself to my absolute limits. And I did like four different bungee jumps, hated every single one of them, but just had to keep going because I'd said that I was going to do them more than anything to myself, right? And each and every time I'm standing on the edge of this ledge and you've got your feet bound together and this kind of thing, you know, hooked onto your feet. And it's terrifying. It really is terrifying. And you've got to shuffle to the edge of this little ledge and you're either looking, you know, shuffling off the edge of a bridge or like a cable car suspended in the middle of a valley, which like drops like 350 feet down or something. Like, I mean, it's crazy. You have to be crazy to do this shit. And I remember each time shuffling to the edge and just melting down completely, just like, oh my God, I can't do it. I can't do it. I can't do it. Just, you know, telling myself all the wrong stuff as well, but completely freaking out to the point that the guy who was holding on to me.
In your mind, the part of your mind, the subconscious part of your mind, whose job is to protect you and keep the ship afloat,
yes,
says, what
yes.
the fuck are you doing? That's yeah, the cliff what? Woman.
Yes, I know. And you know, it was a really interesting experience because I also, in that process, had a really kind of clear idea of, shit, when people throw themselves off a building, off a bridge, because they want to end their life. I mean, what state of mind do you have to be in to get to the point where you can actually do it? Like,
that
I mean, seriously.
Option. Right.
When that's the easier, I mean, cause that is, it's real kind of mental, maybe torture is the wrong word, but it's intense. It's really intense. And everything
and you're
tied
to something and you know that you're going to be.
Exactly. Exactly. But everything in your mind and body is like, no. Everything, you know, is just complete
self-preservation.
Yeah, sure. And it really gave me this like understand, oh my God, you know, what place must people be in when they actually get to a place where they just do it, where that's the best option for them. It's. So anyway, the guy is holding on to me and they're not allowed to push you off because if you fall badly, then it falls on them, right?
Right.
So you have to throw yourself off, which makes it even worse because you're the one that has to be like, okay, I'm going to do this. And it's that indecision. The longer you stay up there, the harder it becomes. The more you work yourself up, the more you panic, anxiety, completely freaking out and just flooded with fear, But then as soon as I made the decision, I was just like, I remember the guy whispered in my ear or whispered, said to me, he was like, if you don't do it now, you need to come off. And I was like, oh shit. He's told me that now. And I've said that I'm going to do this and I'm here. So I have to do it. And I did it in the most ungraceful way you could ever do a bungee jump. I literally curled up into a little ball and rolled off the end.
Oh my God.
And that's how I did it all four times.
But you did it.
But I did it. And it was amazing. Once I was free falling, it was unbelievable, like really unbelievable. The freedom, really, it's like flying. It's crazy.
I will continue to have my flight experiences either on the airplane or on the back of the horse. Thank you very much.
But it's that space of indecision that really, it's like a prison. It keeps you trapped, that space of indecision. And I was watching, Chelsea and Hillary Clinton co-wrote a really beautiful book that I love called Gutsy Women.
Yep.
And it's a series of stories about women from history and current in current times. And it's a great book. I love it. And they made a series on Apple TV as well. And the series is beautiful. They basically travel around and talk to all of these wonderful women. And in one of the episodes, Hillary's having a conversation with a lady. I can't remember if this lady was a psychologist. I'm not sure. I can't remember what she did. And this lady was asking her about the time with that famous time with Bill. And Hillary was saying, the worst part was not knowing what I was going to do. You know, the worst part was staying in that space of indecision. She said, once I made the decision to stay with him and to you know, recover my marriage, everything became much easier. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And it's the decision.
And it can be, you know, this whole thing can be spread to almost everything in our lives. Because when I think about riding, so when I used to teach jumping, right, with kids and with horses, when I was training horses, there's that moment you're heading towards a fence, right? And if I want people to really hear this, because the energy that you put out there when you're in that moment of indecision and that sort of thing, it permeates everybody. And that's when people will grab a hold, particularly vampires on the shadow side will grab a hold of that energy and they'll use it against you. But when the horses, if you're heading towards a fence and you're not confident about that fence that's coming up, that horse is not going to be confident and they're not going to jump in the same manner as if you're heading towards that and you've got the ability, you can do this, bub. Right? Or whoever, you know, any of the horses you were riding, you've got to help to feed that. Because, so think about that. I mean, it goes to every part of our life. Once we decide that it's going to be easy, it makes it easy for both people, you know, for both, right. Well, for both partners in that situation. But anytime, right? Once you decided, you were like, there he goes, right? And we can always go back to that old thing, the easy way or the hard way. Because when we have decided that we want to change something, it's like this whole smoking thing. You know, those people who keep saying, well, I just couldn't do it. Well, all right, whatever. I don't know how to deal with that anymore. Obvious. Oftentimes I don't want to deal with that in a lot of instances. It's like, really, you made a decision and then it was so powerful that it pulled you back. Really? And I think because I'm so far outside of that, that I can't even conceptualize the idea of ever going back to smoking a cigarette again. Right.
But I mean, okay. So then we have this kind of falling off the wagon thing, right? So yes. We've made the decision to make a change. It's that process of, okay, I've got a problem. I've identified that I've got a problem. So I can now see that there's a problem. I'm informing myself about the problem. I'm looking for kind of solutions and then I'm looking for solution providers, people that can help me solve this problem. And that's when I find the practitioner or whoever it is, I find the right person. or a variety of people that can potentially help me with this problem. That doesn't mean that that's going to happen in a straight line, that you're going to start working with somebody. I mean, have you never had a client where they've kind of come up and down over the sessions until you're like, oh, okay, cool, now we're here. That's why we do a minimum of 3 sessions rather than just one and done, off you go, right? Because we want to make sure that that client, we're asking them to make changes potentially that they've been working in a particular way for 20, 30, 40 years, who knows, right? So we want to accompany them through that process as we're peeling back the layers, right? As you peel back the layers, other things come to the surface that might trigger that crew member,
but you know what?
Here's that
the
might.
Thing. Sometimes I think we need to be careful about that, right? Because that also plants the idea that there's multiple layers, and sometimes there are multiple layers. Sometimes there's just the problem.
Right. Sure. Yeah.
Right. And so I don't, you know, I mean, sometimes we are, you know, that's why we do the 3 sessions, but I don't want people to get the idea that it's like, oh, you know, there's this multiple thing that can sometimes, it can sometimes be associated
with
more
things. I'm not saying
it's
always that. Yeah. I'm not saying it's always that, but sometimes that's the case. And yes. Sometimes somebody comes back for a session 2. Oh, yeah, it was awesome. Then they come back to a session 3 and they're like, oh, actually, it's dipped. Okay, well, what's happened there?
Yes.
You know, what in the environment has triggered that crew member to feel like it needs to sort of take a few steps back? Let's correct that, right? You're correcting the different kind of triggers. Triggers,
absolutely.
Whether that's the right word or not.
Well, sure it is, because anything that brings you back to the old behavior pattern,
yeah,
right, it's a stimuli. Right. Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's a stimulus, right? If you don't want to use trigger, any kind of stimulus that echoes and brings up that emotional frequency, you know, that triggers it, right? There it goes again. Mm-hmm. But, you know, that fires that up, you know, I mean, of course, we're going to, and that is one of the things I love about the way that we work, because we have a way to calibrate for that. We have a way for you to figure out, man, was I really successful? And yeah, that does make it nice that we've got the ability to do that. And you can go in and say, well, you know, yeah, this week it was great. But when I went out this week and I was with all these other people in these other situations, all of a sudden this happened and I quite don't understand why. Well, good. Well, let's just talk about it and get rid of that, right?
Yeah.
Or you know, or just make the change to that piece as well.
Yeah. 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 And you know, I often talk about life doesn't happen in a straight line, right? It's full of peaks and troughs and twirls and curls and all sorts of squiggly bits, right? And that's the same, that can be the same with change, but that doesn't mean that change can't be easy. If you're really ready, you're there, you're ready to go, you've made the decision, you're fully kind of 100% invested, you're like, yeah, no, I'm going to make this change. I'm ready to make this change. As you know, Tim Away says, we don't know when change is going to happen, but it happens in a split second when it does.
Yep.
We can also talk about different kinds of progress. So we can talk about instant change, retrospective and accumulative. So that instant change, when you just see it, you know, somebody kind of just walks out of the session just glowing. They're a different person. They've like shed that skin right in front of you and you're like, oh, amazing. You know, wasn't that exciting and really pleased for that person. Accumulative, where they notice it over time.
Over time,
right?
Right. And sometimes with the accumulative, you have to help them to recognize it.
Sometimes. But then with retrospective, sometimes, you know, a few months have passed and they haven't even noticed that they don't do that thing anymore, right?
Right.
They haven't even noticed that they don't get anxious, I don't know, when they get ready for work.
Because our mind focuses on the next thing that isn't working.
Right, exactly, exactly. And then they just don't even remember that they've worked with you or that what you did had any effect
right.
on them whatsoever, which is fine.
I don't know why I went to them. I've been fine about that for months. It's like, you've been fine about that since you came and saw me, but it had nothing to do with the work we did. God, perfect.
Fine too. At the end of the day, you do this because you want people to get the change. And if they've got the change, then and they, you know, whatever. At the end of the, you know, that they attribute it to the work they did with you or not, it's irrelevant. They got the change.
Yes, as long as they get what they want, then you know, then that's what's really important. I mean, you know, that what client-centered, you know, work is all about. We're not here to please ourselves.
But that's often why, you know, we do the scaling as well, the kind of measuring with clients, because like, okay, well, we've narrowed down this very particular thing, that result that we're aiming for. Where are we on that kind of result scale in regards to that very particular thing? And in that case, they're so kind of sharply, we keep them so sharply focused on the outcome that they came to us for, that when they start talking about, oh, but this has been really rubbish, and this is, hang on a second, come back to that particular thing, right? How's that been? Well, that hasn't really been an issue. Oh, well, that's exactly what we've been working on.
Right. Yeah. And that demonstrates, you know, that goes right back to the fact that that is just how easy it is to change. But again, because our brains are more geared towards, because of how we're geared with TV, with commercials, with everything, that we are trained and conditioned to look for what isn't working.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in everything that we do throughout society, it's like, what isn't working? What isn't working? And you know, how do we change that in the world? How do we change that?
Yeah, as human beings, we have a built-in negativity bias. But then how do you explain optimistic people?
Right. I mean, I'm everybody calls me a Pollyanna because I always believe it doesn't matter how bad things get. I know that I just always believe that tomorrow is going to be better.
But I think that also is a mindset. It's a mentality, and it's something. Okay, some people are just naturally inclined to be optimistic and think that way, and other people train themselves to be optimistic and think that way, and look on the bright side, and every cloud has a silver lining, and all the rest of it.
You know, people who have that resilience streak in them are generally, I think, more optimistic. And I think they have oftentimes overcome more things. No?
Yeah. I don't know. Yeah, I suppose resilience optimism is a part of resilience. Yeah, sure. I'm just thinking out loud, really. Optimism absolutely is an aspect of resilience, right? If you're going to be able to bounce back, you need to be able to look beyond the shit that's just hit the fan, right? And say, oh, okay, well, I'll get that cleaned up and then move on to the next thing. So absolutely, yeah, optimism is a symptom of resilience.
Yes. Yeah.
A component, right?
A component of
resilience. Yeah, component, yeah, sure.
Symptoms sound so negative, right?
It does, doesn't it? Yeah. a component.
one of the pieces of forward movement, whatever.
Yeah.
I think it is. The two kind of go hand in hand.
One thing that I think we need to be careful about, and I've had somebody or a couple of people really approach me with the idea that, oh, you're a hypnotist, you can just click your fingers and make this go away. And I think that's a dangerous belief system, and you know, that, what am I trying to say here, Anthony? Help me finish the sentence.
Well, I mean, I think I know where you're going, but yeah, yes, change is easy, but it isn't that easy. It's simple, but it's not easy, as they say in the programs, right?
Right.
Because it does take personal responsibility.
That's it. It's a collaborative process. And that's what I've said to somebody. I've got one person particularly in mind who was like, you can just make me go to sleep and click your fingers and that's it. This will be gone. And I was like, no. No.
I would be charging a lot more.
I would be charging a Ferrari.
Yeah. Right. You couldn't afford me, sweetheart.
And that particular person that I'm thinking of was, oh my God, such a closed mind. I mean, their mind was just like, I don't know, what's the hardest element on earth that's just unbreakable.
Unobtainium. No, vibranium. Whatever, I don't know.
Whatever it is. I mean, their mind was just so closed. It was such a closed rock that there was just, we weren't going anywhere. You know, we really weren't going anywhere. And I had to turn them down as a client because I was like, this is just not going to work. But it was really that was what they were looking for. And I understand, because they were in such a desperate place with their problem, that it was really just like, do something to me.
Right.
Right. Oh, and I remember being in that space.
Been there before.
Right. I remember being in that space when I was in my kind of late teens, early 20s, and I was desperate inside my own head. And I didn't know how to help myself, right? I didn't have the tools and the skills and the resources and the knowledge and the experience. Yep. I didn't know where to go. And I remember the thought in my head was, I just want somebody to crack my head open and rewire it.
Yep. Yep. And that's when I first took my first medications, because that was going to be the magic ticket. Right. Once I took that pill, that would make the change. That would make everything different.
Let's not move into that realm, but yeah, you know, and I think that was when I very much started to take responsibility, and that was the beginning of my journey. Right. But this person was so not ready to take any kind of responsibility. And it's a dangerous thought. I'm going to go to a hypnotist. They're going to click their fingers and they're going to just wipe my brain and get rid of this problem. So it's something that you're doing to me. I don't have to be involved in it whatsoever. There's no collaboration from my part necessary at all. It's purely in the hands of this person. Right. And that's when you get those things that, you know, like faith healers and things like that, which is okay. I know in the States that's, we're talking about big money. It's a big game, right?
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, in some areas, yeah, there's definitely, yes, we'll say yes, because there's a bunch of freaky, freaking Christian, just woo-woo, like snake charming and all sorts of weird shit going on.
Yeah.
Yeah, lots of faith healing. Stomping around, I can feel the power moving through me. I'm gonna touch you on your head right now.
But that's the whole point, you know. People are putting the responsibility in somebody else's hands, and yes, then it's very easy to say, oh, well, that didn't work. And now, it's the same as going to a doctor and putting everything, all of the responsibility in their hands, rather than saying, okay, well, I've now got this diagnosis. It's now up to me to go and do a shit ton of research and find out everything I can about this and how the body works and try different things that are going to help me, and work in collaboration with the doctor, rather than just saying, oh, well, okay, well, now I'm in your hands, do everything, and I'm going to take no responsibility whatsoever.
Right. Right. And I'll tell you what, I'm one of those kind of people. It's like, I do anything I can to not be on medications. And so again, those choices, right? I choose to follow directions when I'm told to do something with my health, and that way I get the best outcome possible. And, you know, even if it's uncomfortable, I do it.
Right. Right. And that's it, right? Change can be uncomfortable. Mm-hmm. And that's part of the problem. I think that's why a lot of people resist change, because it can be uncomfortable. And I've talked about this before, right? We don't have positive and negative emotions, as far as I'm concerned. And I hate that narrative. We have comfortable and uncomfortable emotions. Mm-hmm. And change generates an uncomfortable sensation, which is why people resist.
Yeah. Well, because it also creates uncomfortable. It's uncomfortable for everybody around you because when you begin to change, you are forcing everybody around you to accept you for who you are becoming, which means that they have to change as well. The relationship changes. There are some people who may not like that relationship changing from who you used to be, because maybe it met their needs. If you were more the old way than the new way, right? Mm. And so that can create resistance for people too, because I don't want to lose my friends.
Mm.
You know, friends stick with you if it's for a positive reason.
But the point is, if we're willing to go through a minimal amount, and I say minimal, it's the discomfort is really cancelled out by what comes afterwards, right? If you're willing to just, like, let's say in a session, if you're willing to be uncomfortable for the next 30 minutes so that you can be completely free of this, I'm just, you know, kind of throwing timings out there, whatever. So you can be completely free of this and you never need to feel it again. You know, you never need to do that thing again. You're never going to experience that level of whatever it is again. Would you be willing to do that? Even if the next 30 minutes are going to be the most difficult for you.
Do you know how many people would say no?
Right.
I mean, let's be real, because we see it all the time, right? I mean, what are people going to choose most often? They're going to choose the easy way.
Yeah.
And the easy way is, well, here's the funny thing. It's not actually the easy way. It's the uncomfortable walking on the thorns through the path they already know. It's just, but they already know that path. They know this discomfort, right? Mm. And since this is the discomfort I know, I'll stay with this because I don't know what that discomfort's going to be about.
Yeah.
And the thing is the other end, there's an end to this discomfort over here where the discomfort over here doesn't end, right? So it's like, do you want a super long journey of uncomfortable or a short journey of uncomfortable?
Yeah. But the short journey sometimes is more intense.
Mm.
And then there's a sense of, you know, freedom and liberation.
Yeah. That's what I have found.
Anyway, we've gone around the houses today,
yes,
haven't we?
Yes, we have. I think we've hit every house in the neighborhood.
Yes.
Unlike the way we do when we actually do work with clients where we don't visit any of the neighbors, we just go straight home. Anyway, thanks everybody for listening. We'll be back next week, and we've got some fun people coming up here in the next couple months. Or at least maybe we think, we don't know. Some travel coming up. I've got a couple conferences I'm going to. And don't forget, if you're out there listening and you're in the Pacific Northwest, please come to the Pacific Northwest Hypnosis Conference, June 3rd and 4th at the Greater Tacoma Convention Center in Tacoma,
Washington. I like how you needed to change your voice for that.
I get into the announcer thing, you know.
Yeah. Anyway, thanks for listening, everyone. Thanks for tuning in. We'll be back in a week. Take care. Bye-bye. Bye.
Thanks for listening to the Hypnotic Healers Podcast. Don't forget to leave us a review and follow us on Facebook. You can also join our mailing list at hypnotichealers.com.